So last week we looked through Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and Solomon wrote about these two areas of life, and it was ambition on one hand, or kind of being overly ambitious, or a lack of ambition on one hand, and relationships on the other hand. And many times we view these areas of life, our ambition and our relationships, as kind of being independent of one another, as being completely separate of one another. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, as Solomon is writing about these things, he's talking about how our ambition and our relationships are things that are kind of intimately intertwined, that our ambition affects the way that we view other people, the way that we relate to other people, and the way that we care about other people, and vice versa. The way that we care about other people and are invested in them, it changes what our ambitions are. And so we were left with a few questions. Will we be people that use others to accomplish our selfish desires? Will we be people that sit back lazily and just allow life to come to us? Those are kind of the negative ends. Or he paints this other picture of life, and it kind of asks us the question, will we be the kind of people that seek to care for and invest in others, and by doing so, improve their lives, and as a result, we reap that benefit in our own lives as well. And then chapter 5 begins in Ecclesiastes, and this is where we're going to dig in and look today. And at first glance, as we read through the first 7 verses of chapter 5, it looks like Solomon kind of completely changes gears. He moves from this discussion of ambition and relationships, and it moves into, really in many ways for the first time, about this sense of how we as people should be approaching God. So will you join with me? We're going to jump right in, and we're going to read these first 7 verses together, and then we're going to go back through and kind of take them apart a little bit. So it starts off in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth. So let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares, and many words mark the speech of a fool. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. For a lot of people, if you've been reading through Ecclesiastes along with us, or if you've been in this message series and you've heard the last several messages, like I said, it seems like chapter 5 is kind of out of place in the book. And to be clear, chapter 5 seems to be maybe one of the places in Ecclesiastes that is most in sync with the rest of the Old Testament. It seems like the things written in there are things that mesh very well with what we would read in from the writings of Moses in the law, or what we'd see in different places through the prophets as they called people to faithfully worshiping God. It seems like it fits in very well with that message. It seems like it fits in with the message of the New Testament that calls us and instructs us in regards to worship. But it seems a little bit like Solomon sort of takes a break from the writing about seeking meaning in life, and he begins to talk about some more conventional wisdom, like what he may have written in the Proverbs. It kind of gives that sense as he references what a fool does and kind of the way a fool might speak a lot and a fool might make promises they don't keep. It kind of gives you that sense of conventional wisdom, but it feels a little bit less clear or less in line with what he has been writing up to this point in Ecclesiastes. But I don't think that's actually the case. What we see when we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and Ecclesiastes chapter 5, it isn't this kind of break or aberration in the story. We see that it's really a contrasting picture from chapter 4. In a lot of ways, chapter 4 is about the worship of self and stuff. It's about the worship that we practice maybe most often. It's about the worship that we're most tempted to practice in our contemporary kind of selfie culture in lots of ways, where many times for us, the easiest thing for us to worship is ourself, our desires, and the things around us that we want. And so Solomon, he talks about that and the way that doesn't satisfy us. And then he moves into chapter 5 and he begins to paint this picture about what it should look like to worship God instead of worshiping those things. And so instead of viewing that as a change in subject or as a transition really in the story, it lines up well with the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 verse 24 as he said, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." It's this picture, and Solomon lays up these contrasting images in the same way that Jesus much later would make this description for us. So let's begin reading again. The first part of verse 1 in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 says this: "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God." And in saying this, Solomon is teaching that God's people need to approach worship mindfully. And in a sense, that seems very obvious. But he unpacks that a little bit. When Solomon says to go to the house of God, when he talks about the house of the Lord, he is certainly referring to the temple that he oversaw the construction of during his reign as king. And this building was this incredible work, this incredible structure, really complex of antiquity, and everything about this building was meant to fill people with awe of the God that they were coming to worship. When you read about the construction of the temple, it talks about how it was made with the finest cedar that was available to a kingdom. It talks about how things were lined with gold and silver. When we think about the structure of the temple, it was this place that had these impressive walls and courtyard, and then this high building, you know, which would have been, outside of kings and major construction projects, would have been completely uncommon and unseen in that day. And it was all meant to fill people with a sense of awe. It was the place where the Ark of the Covenant was housed. It was the place where people came to experience forgiveness from God. The place where really in that day and in that time, it was the focus of their religious life, but it was also the key epicenter of their cultural life. It was the most important place in their political life. It was the place where people would gather for spiritual practices and practices of kind of national identity. It was all intertwined in this one building and in this one place. And over all of those things, it was meant to impress people that the God that they were coming to worship was above all of the other gods. And so before a person would even come into those temple courts, it provided this kind of aesthetic that there was a weightiness, kind of a gravitas to that moment as they were coming up the steps. And so King Solomon, partially as the person who oversaw this project, he affirms the importance of this act of coming into the temple. And he instructs them to guard their steps. And when he tells them to guard their steps, he's not talking about a tripping hazard or anything like that. He's calling them to enter into the temple with thoughtfulness. A call to not step haphazardly into the place where they are coming for worship. It's kind of a similar sentiment that we see with Moses in Exodus chapter 3. When Moses is there in the presence of God and he's told to remove his shoes because he's entering into a holy place, this was the impression that people got as they were coming into the temple. It was a place where they were supposed to recognize, above all things, that they were walking on holy ground. Everything about the temple was meant to convey this to people. And so Solomon reminds people, as you're even approaching the temple, even before you're in the courts of the temple, you need to come mindfully. He goes on to say this, beginning right where we left off there in the second half of verse 1. "Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares and many words mark the speech of a fool. When the people came to the temple, it was a very active process. The building of the temple was where the Ark of the Covenant was housed, but it was a place where people were coming into the temple regularly to gather together as a people, for important moments culturally. It was a place where people were coming in to worship in the house of the Lord with other people. So it's something they're doing corporately, something they're doing together. It was a place, where people are coming to offer sacrifices. So at different points and in different times, people are bringing all these animals into the temple to be offered to the priests. Everything about this is kind of an active, noisy process where there are lots of people around. And yet Solomon gives them this instruction that they need to be people who come not in this hasty kind of manner, in this noisy manner, but they need to be people who come with a sense of reverence as they come into the temple. And for many of us, that can be difficult to do. On one hand, we might think of many of the trips into the temple almost like how we would think of our Christmas Eve gatherings here. For many of us, when you go to church on Christmas Eve, there's an element there where you're excited to show up and to get to church. And at the same time, you have a million other things on your mind. We're distracted by a million other things. We're distracted by the travels that we have coming up with the holiday. We're distracted by having our homes ready for family to be in town, by wrapping last minute gifts. There's a heaviness and an excitement in that moment. And at the same time, there are a million other things that swirl around in our minds when we gather together in that kind of place. And it can be difficult for us to come into a place without being hasty, to come into a place with a posture of listening. It can be difficult for us to come into a place where we're kind of mindful about what we're doing. And sometimes, with the people of Israel, when they were doing this, they're joining together at a time when the city is swelling into this huge population. And so they're seeing family members they don't see. There's tons of people that are all around. They're coming in and it's this kind of noisy, congested sort of atmosphere. And Solomon is saying, don't allow that to distract you. Guard your steps and be prepared for worship. It could happen in big moments, and it can happen every week as well. Lots of times it's easy for people to get caught up in the activity and forget the intention behind it. And that would have been true of the people in Solomon's day as they were preparing to come to worship, in the same way that it's true for all of us who sit in this room. That people would be upset about family members who aren't ready to leave on time. That people could be distracted, by the whatever you have going on for the rest of the day. That things become so routine after a certain amount of time of doing the same thing over and over again that it loses this emphasis where you're really mindfully doing something and you're just kind of walking through the motions. Solomon says that the way people come into the temple in guarding their steps, that the way they approach worship with intention and thoughtfulness was to come with a posture of listening, to come with open ears to what it was that God has for them. And he gives this picture, right in that part of verse 1, in that second half, where he explains that the alternative to that is offering the sacrifice of fools. The inference there, even though he doesn't just come right out and say it in verse 1 and he kind of gets to it in verse 2, is that on one hand we can approach worship mindfully in expectation, waiting for God to speak to us. And on the other hand, we can come with our agenda and with what we want in our words, and we can fill that space of worship. And so Solomon cautions God's people on their approach to the temple. He says they need to be people that do this mindfully. He says that they need to come with a posture of listening to God rather than expressing their thoughts to God. He says that in their times of approaching God in prayer, they need to be mindful of who they're communicating with. There's this idea in prayer that we approach God, that we have the opportunity to speak with God. And Solomon's reminding people that for many of us, when we pray and we approach God, we only say what we want to say, and we never give him the opportunity to communicate with us as well. These first few verses stress for us that we need to be a people that approach worship with a posture of listening. And this is hard for us for several reasons. The first of which is that it's so easy for us, like we mentioned with holidays and special events, it's so easy for us as people to become distracted. And I think most of you who come here regularly know this. I'm not asking for a raise of hands because I don't like that when I'm in your position. But if we're honest, if we thought about the 45 minutes that we've been having service this morning, how many of us would say there's a moment where we've been distracted? Has there been something that came into your mind this morning that took your focus away from God, that didn't allow you to have undivided attention on Him? Maybe it was that frustration that once again we're late to church and we're walking in while announcements are going on or a prayer's happening and we don't really know, we're frustrated with a family member for that. Maybe it's that your phone keeps buzzing right now in your pocket about some kind of notification. There are a million different things. Maybe it's the responsibilities that you have to do later about mowing the grass or getting something done before the work week begins again. There are so many opportunities that we have to be distracted that it's hard for us to approach worship mindfully. And it's hard for us to listen long enough to give undivided attention to anything in our lives. And Solomon explains for us that part of the reason why it's easy for us to become distracted, part of the reason why it's hard for us to give anything our undivided attention, is that for many of us, certainly myself included, oftentimes we are offering up the sacrifice of fools. We're offering up our words, our thoughts, our desires. We're pursuing our kinds of plans. Even when we come together to pray God or to read His word, many times we're reading that with the filter of what we want to hear or need to hear or want to see instead of allowing Him the space and the room and the opportunity to speak to us. This lines up well with what Jesus taught us about prayer in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 7. When Jesus said, "And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask Him." And there are lots of places throughout the New Testament where, when we're instructed in prayer, that there's an appropriate time and place for us to offer our requests and to offer our petitions to God. We're told that oftentimes that we don't have things because we haven't asked God for them. It's not like we aren't instructed to pray with God and to share our requests with Him, but Jesus teaches us that we don't need to dwell on these things in prayer, that we don't need to make this the emphasis and the focus of our prayers. He explains to us that we don't need to be people that pray and babble on in our prayer and use flowery, King James Bible language as we approach God in the thought that would somehow make Him more prone to listen to us or to comply with our desires for Him. Jesus teaches us that the real purpose of prayer, that much of the emphasis of prayer is for us to align our hearts with God's heart. That much of the intention of prayer is for us to align the way that we see the world with the way that God sees the world. And then, as we recognize God, and recognize Him, and recognize what He wants to do, and see the world in His way, that we allow Him to speak into us about how we should be living, instead of dictating to Him how we want to live and asking for His help in that. Solomon tells us, do not be hasty in our hearts and allow our words to be few. Jesus tells us not to babble on like pagans in an attempt to persuade or to appease God through the number of words. And then Solomon goes on to say this in the last section we'll read for today. He says, "When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, 'My vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands?' Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God." In this final passage, Solomon displays for us, teaches us, that we need to approach God with honesty. That we need to be people that don't come and put on the best face or don't come in a deceptive way to try to get what we want, but that we need to approach God in honesty. And you know, we can easily relate to the idea of being more mindful in the way that we enter into worship. We can easily relate to this idea that we need to be listening to God when we approach Him in times of prayer and worship and reading His Word. But this idea of making and fulfilling vows to God is language that can feel a little bit foreign to us as believers. It's not something that we often talk about as Christians. But in the Old Testament, there wasn't a place in the law where it was written where people were instructed to make vows to God, but it was made very clear to people that if they made vows to God, they needed to keep those vows. They needed to be honest as they approach God. We see this in Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, when Moses says, "When a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said." Moses doesn't tell people that he should make vows, but he makes it very clear that if someone makes a vow, that they need to fulfill what they've promised to God. And Jesus goes one step further in Matthew chapter 5. And in verses 34 to 37, he says this, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." So in the law of Moses, it says, if you make a vow, you need to keep it. In the words of Solomon, in the wisdom of Solomon, he says, if you make a promise to the Lord, you need to do everything you can to keep that promise. And then Jesus says, even this whole system where we make vows or promises is built really on the fact that as people, we are dishonest. If we weren't dishonest, we would never have to say, "I promise, if you do this, I'll do that." We would be able to just do it. If we were honest people, we would never have to say, "I promise I'm not lying, this is really what happened." If we were honest people, Jesus says, we would never have to qualify our intentions or what we're going to do with the this for that kind of relationship. If you do this, I'll do that. And then to walk back on those words. Jesus says, if we were honest people, we would answer things plainly and we would follow through with what we've said we're going to do. And we've all seen those kinds of storylines, or we've experienced those kinds of situations in life where someone's in a tight spot and they don't see a way out and they say, "God, if you just do this, I promise I will, you know, serve you for the rest of my life. God, if you just get me out of this money problem, I promise I'll give you all the money for the rest of my life. God, if you just forgive me of this big sin," and when we say forgive, lots of times we mean if you just get me out of trouble and the consequences for this sin, "I promise that I will never put myself in this kind of situation again. If you just do this, I promise I will just do that." We've all experienced those kinds of things. And Solomon is really clear when he says, if you make that promise, you better keep it. And so Jesus says we should live with such a level of honesty that we don't even have to make a vow. We should never have to qualify statements in that kind of way. And Solomon, he says that this kind of honesty is an important piece of the way that we approach God in worship, of the way that we seek Him out. That as we're spending time in prayer, that we need to be mindful of what we're doing so that we're not agreeing to things we don't agree with. As we join together to sing songs corporately, that we need to be mindful of the words that we are singing, because they're expressing things to God. It isn't just that we're coming together and singing some nice words with one another, that we're expressing something to God. And so we learn a few things from Ecclesiastes chapter 5. We learn that we need to be people that eliminate our distractions in worship as well. That we need to, you know, do whatever it takes for us to be people that approach worship mindfully. That we need to silence our phones and turn off the buzzers so that we're not distracted by something in our pockets or in our purse. That we need to be people that whenever those responsibilities for the day creep in, that we say, I'm not going to focus on this right now. I'm going to put this away and focus in on what's taking place. That we need to be people that as we come into a corporate gathering together, need to be aware of what we're doing here. That it isn't just some kind of routine that we're approaching, but that it's something that we're joining together with the intent of worshiping and bringing honor to God. We need to be people that learn to listen in our prayers. Many of us, and again, I'll put myself in this kind of position. When we go to pray, we oftentimes find ourselves in this place where we are immediately filling all of that space with our own words and our own thoughts. And they can be good words and good thoughts. We can be expressing the wonderful things that God's done in our hearts and our lives. We can be honoring Him for the work that He's done. We can be worshiping Him as we ascribe greatness to Him. And those things are all good, and we should be doing those things. And we should be approaching God with our requests. But we need to also make sure that when we approach Him and communicate with Him in prayer, that we allow Him the opportunity to speak to us as well. And finally, we need to be people who are faithful adherents, who are faithful followers of God. We should never be people who are making hollow vows to alleviate our own suffering or to get what we want, to try to set up a this for that kind of relationship with God. We should be people that approach Him with reasoned tones. We should be people that approach Him with thoughtfulness as we come to pray. We should be people that approach Him with the honor and respect that He's due. And so in light of Ecclesiastes chapter 5, there are two things that I want to encourage you to do this week. The first is to seek to foster a practice of intentionality by eliminating distractions and listening to God. And do this as we gather together for corporate worship, but even more so than this, do this in your personal life as you gather with your family. Do this by yourselves as you go to pray and to read scripture. Do whatever it takes when you're approaching God to eliminate the distractions that are in front of you. This happens to me all the time when I'm reading, whether it's scripture or reading a devotional or thinking through things or journaling something. All the time this happens where I'll start doing it and immediately I'll get distracted by my phone. And for me, I oftentimes need to not just put my phone away or put it in a place that's visible. I need to put it in a physically different location. I need to put it across the room and to go sit down so that I can be mindful about the space that I'm in. Because once something that's inconvenient or that I kind of want to check out comes up, that makes it easy to do that. We need to be people that eliminate distractions and are mindful as we approach God. And secondly, we need to praise God for Jesus, the fulfiller of the law and our mediator with God the Father. You know, as Solomon's describing this act of temple worship, and as we think about what it would have been like in this time to join together in temple worship, it was impressive. It was meant to fill people with awe. It was meant to cause people to feel this sense of reverence to God. And even as verse 7 ends, when Solomon says, therefore fear God, he's talking about that kind of fear where God is unpredictable and He's so far above us and He's so much more powerful than us that when we approach Him, we need to recognize who He is and how great He is compared to us. And when people did that, they were coming to see a priest who could stand as the mediator between them and God. But as we come together today, we stand without that mediator. We have Christ, who being in very nature God, has been the mediator for us to reunite us with God the Father. And so when we come together to worship corporately, when you sit in your homes in the quiet of your own mornings at your table, to pray and to read and to worship God privately. We have a mediator in Christ who has made that possible for us
to be reunited with the Father. And we should be mindful of that, and we should be offering him up our praise and our glory, because he instructs us, even in the call to be mindful and attentive and careful, he instructs us not to come all put together and perfect. That's not the message we see from Christ. He invites us to come as we are and to be changed by him and by the work that he's offered on our behalf. And so this morning, as we close and as we worship God together, I would ask you to think about what it would look like for you in your life to be mindful and intentional about eliminating the things that distract you from worshiping and honoring God.